It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, and this is my show. And today, we return to the Underground to look at Lucha Underground Season 2, round off our reviews from, good lord, about 6 months ago, what happened in the rest of the season. And we're going to take a look forward at what's going on with the show in Season 3, which is swiftly coming upon us. But for right now, we'll go for a break.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
Welcome back. And my guest today, we'll start with Marcus Green of WrestleTalk.tv, resident TNA and WWE correspondent. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Great to be back on the show talking some lucha today.
Yeah, and also we have Alex Watt of Unilad. How are you, sir?
Good, yeah. It's strange after we did so much Japanese wrestling, like, to actually cover something else. We went through quite a significant G1 climax period where I was just talking about Japanese wrestling all the time. So
even in your private life, just to your friends.
Yeah, even in my sleep, yeah.
Oh dear. Yes, then if you want to go back and listen to our 5 weeks of worth of coverage of the G1 Climax tournament, it's well worth a listen because it was one of the best laughs all of us had, I think, doing the Troopany show. So well worth a look back at what happened in Tokyo last month. But we're looking at Boyle Heights, California, the suburb of LA. Is it actually a real suburb, Marcus? Does Boyle Heights actually exist, or is it just been made up for TV?
It's just one of those made-up things.
Interesting. It does sound like the right place for it to be in as well, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to look back at Season 3, and the way we're going to do that, we're going to look back at the last three shows of Lucha Underground, which were the Ultima Lucha Dos, which was the big show for the season. And it started with Part 1, which was the Mac defeating Cage in a Falls Count Anywhere match. For a unique opportunity, as Dario Cueto often says. The Max had an interesting year. He's really grown into an individual figure, having come away from his introduction into the company. And Cage has had an interesting year as well. Alex, what's been your thoughts on Cage and the Mac in Season 2?
Yeah, I guess I might go off on a tangent here a little bit, but I felt like this tournament for a unique opportunity, which does not roll off the tongue, that name for a tournament, but it felt like it was like these four guys, not forgotten about, but it was like they got to Ultima Lucha Dos and were like, oh yeah, we should put these guys in a match, which is a shame, because yeah, the Mac and Cage in particular had good seasons, Cage especially, where he seemed to like really come into his own, and they had him in quite a few storylines. They built well to him against Matanza Cueto. That was one of the matches of the season, of two massive dudes beating the crap out of each other, which is always welcome. I felt like this was maybe a little bit indicative of how the season may be controversial. This might be, I don't know, maybe lost momentum a bit. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I think as you got towards Ultima Lucha this year was maybe not as exciting as Ultima Lucha last year. They had done some good stuff and they've got to things, but I think it's maybe just, you know, you got a lot more new characters in this season. They were a bit more stable now that they knew they got a second and third season, so it was a bit easier to kind of be a long-term storyteller. So maybe, yeah, maybe they did lose a bit of steam towards the end of the season. Marcus, what did you think of the Mac and Cage over their year and in this particular episode?
Mac and Cage, first off, I stand corrected. Sorry to my Mexican fans, Boy Heights is a legit place. yeah, I was thinking about a completely different city for some reason. But yeah, with Mac and Cage, yeah, like much like Alex said, two big guys, you know, just kind of ramming into each other and coming off, you know, that whole cinder block deal. Obviously, that was something big last season, and was really something memorable from the last time they clashed. But you know, I think the Mac has improved and gotten a lot more spotlight this season, as well as Cage, and it came off well in that match. Although I think there were some spots where I kind of felt like it could have been the finish, but they just kind of kept going. I think we got that multiple times on this show. But yeah, I mean, it's always cool to see those guys, you know, collab, because just what those guys are able to do at their size, and you're not seeing a lot of that stuff coming, especially Cage, who can really do dives and everything, although he doesn't have to, but he'll do it, you know, for special shows like this. So it's always interesting to see those guys collide.
Yeah.
They got good chemistry as well, yeah. Both of them. Yeah, the match itself, like, I thought was really good. Like Marcus said, it was a bit ECW at times, where they hit like something insane and then it's just a two. Like, they just kick out. But they did play well off their match last year, and a lot of teasers, like the cinder block thing, was very, very clever how they brought that and had that, you know, did put a twist on it from what happened last season was smart.
Interesting. Well, the winner of that match, which was the Mac, got to face either Son of Havoc or Texano in a bar fight, which is the next matchup. I've liked Texano for a very long time. I think he's awesome. And I think he's one of the guys that has really adapted to North American mainstream wrestling really well, because a lot of lucha guys don't, but he's done it in a different way, if you see what I mean. And I think Texano was really good this year. And Son of Havoc is Son of Havoc. Matt Cross has been fantastic ever since the beginning of Lucha Underground, and he plays the downtrodden underdog so well. you know, with a guy whose facial expressions have been taken away because he's wearing a mask, he does it so well. Marcus, what are your thoughts on these two?
I thought these two as well had good chemistry. It's almost funny, because like I said, with the Cage and Mac match, almost like would have liked to have seen them have like a just straight up match, because it's almost like everything that they, you know, kind of had to work around with the you know, the bar and everything, almost kind of made them, you know, hold back in a sense, just because we know what these guys are capable of, especially a Son of Havoc, who almost looks like he's holding back at times with some of the things that he's able to pull off. But you know, these two guys went out there, and you know, they had a hell of a match, put their bodies on the line, and hopefully we get to see them, you know, have maybe a series of matches in coming up in season three. Two guys that are really, really good mainstays for the roster, like you said, with Tejano. He's done well to come over here and adapt really well. I think a lot of me, what attracts me to him the most is kind of, you know, what he can bring in certain storylines. I think a lot of his pizzazz, if you will, comes with who he's working with. Like, I really like what he did with El Patron and that whole thing. So given the right opponent, he can fire on all cylinders. And with Son of Havoc, he's always kind of had this steady build since season one. And he really got a chance to shine this season, especially with special opportunity that he got. So hopefully his star continues to rise in season three as well. But great match right here.
Yeah, the trouble is, when you put things into sets rather than putting things into the normal working environment, it sometimes can cause you some limitations. Yeah. Having said that, I did see Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray at an actual bar having a fight earlier this year. A wrestling match, not really a fight. And the stuff they came up with was quite incredible. And I hope the insurance of the bar was quite good. Anyway, Alex, what did you think of these two in over the year and in this particular event?
Yeah, it's funny you say about the actual bar fight, because that's something that Lucha Underground could probably get away with and do, whereas this was a bit more, they just wheeled out a bar with like bottles and glasses on. It sort of I agree with Marcus. It almost like hindered the match, if you like. These two could probably just have a straight match and it would have been, they were trying to like really cram in too much with the bar, if you like, because it was there. But yeah, I really like both the guys. And then, like I said earlier, it feels like they got a little bit lost in the shuffle over the course of the second half of the season. Which is perhaps me being a little bit negative, but Son of Havoc like is so popular, and that character is like the like a weird everyman type character, despite the stuff that he can do. Like the way it's written is kind of like, you know, he represents everyone kind of thing, and he's the underdog and stuff like that. So yeah, I kind of like to see them do more with him next season, because I think he's, you know, he is so popular with the fans. And they had the chance to do that, but we'll chat about that in a second after, you know, the Son of Havoc Mac match.
Yeah, the final was Son of Havoc and Mac, which was 5 minutes and 34 seconds. Should we do the Dr. Wagner thing as well involving this, because Dr. Wagner's only been kind of in the late part of the season, so we can cover him really quite well as well. So yeah, Son of Havoc defeated the Mac in 5 minutes and 34 seconds, but then lost to Dr. Wagner Jr., accompanied by Famous B and the beautiful Brenda, in a singles match for Son of Havoc's unique opportunity in 2 minutes and 4 seconds. And Wagner comes from a very famous wrestling family in Mexico. His father, Dr. Wagner, if you've heard of the Dr. Bomb, the Seat Power Bomb, he invented that. That's why it's called a Dr. Bomb. Anyway, but Dr. Wagner Jr., not the original Dr. Wagner, obviously. Moving on. Alex, what did you think of the final and the round-off of this particular episode?
So the final between Son of Havoc and the Mat was kind of disappointing, unfortunately, because it was short and they announced this falls count anyway, and then they just had a quick match, which is probably because they both like had the, you know, they'd gone through hell basically the other two matches, so I could understand that. It was just I couldn't understand why they tagged the falls count anywhere thing on it when they just didn't do a falls count anywhere match. but then, you know, the unique opportunity, the twist thing was smart. You know, that's what Dario Cueto's character is, so it made sense. It was basically that he could choose the briefcase of money, I think it was like 100 grand or something mental, and then, or he could have a title shot at next year's Ultima Lucha. So that for a moment looked like they were really like setting up the story for next year, that Son of Havoc would have to like defend the contract or something, kind of like they do in the G1, if you like, where he'd have to defend it again and again, and there'd be all these obstacles put in his way. But basically, Dario said, you know, the twist is you have to defend it right now. I believe it was, you basically, the only way you get the title shot is if you win this next match, which, you know, in typical Dario fashion, he just introduced at the last second.
Joke.
And that's when Dr. Wagner Jr. came out, which was a nice payoff to the Famous B thing, where he's been looking for the right client, and then so he just goes to Mexico and gets a legend, basically. I like the introduction of Dr. Wagner Jr. because it was a nice twist, but the feeling is that it kind of makes that entire episode mean nothing. Yeah. Like they've just done a tournament and nothing's come of it, and you have the problem that Son of Havoc's not being buried, but there was an opportunity there to set him up nicely for the next season, which this might still do because he got screwed out of something. But yeah, I felt like they could have maybe done a little bit more, if that makes sense.
He got at least 70% Russo'd.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
I like that's a verb now.
Oh, the stuff he's come out with this week. Kevin Owens isn't less over than David Arquette.
I mean,
anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Stay on task. Marcus, your thoughts on Dr. Wagner and this particular series of matches?
Yeah, I very much, you know, echo the sentiments of Alex. You know, the matches to start, you know, this tournament out was, you know, pretty cool. Obviously, they kind of left more to be desired for us, but, you know, they kind of got down to that final between Son of Havoc and Mac, and much like Alex said, it was kind of just disappointing, not only because of lack of time, but then, you know, they threw in the stipulation, which understand, I guess Guido was really trying to pack things on for this second installment of Ultimate Lucha, but, you know, it can get excessive at times. So it was a little bit disappointing, although I was happy that Son of Havoc, you know, got the win. It looked like it was going somewhere, but obviously Dario extended the unique opportunity, which is basically by now everyone should know that all but means that you're going to get screwed some kind of way. So I'll wait the day, hopefully in season three, when somebody just throws that back in his face based off past showings. So, but yeah, this was kind of, seeing that this was the first part of the three-parter, I'm kind of glad they got this out the way, and I think it kind of improved as the shows went on. But yeah, I think, you know, bringing in Dr. Wagner was a great twist, especially with that whole coming off the Famous B thing after he basically beat Masquerita with his shoe, and that whole thing that was going on. So he literally upgraded in stature and in fame. So yeah, that's gonna be interesting seeing what he does with that carrying over into season three. But again, much like Alex said, it kind of felt like it made everything irrelevant, because again, Dario comes out and just flips everything on his head, you know, with his unique opportunity. So hopefully Son of Havoc can re-pick up some of that momentum in season three.
Well, it would be interesting if they'd actually, instead of Dr. Wagner Jr., they got Máscara Sagrada, who Máscarita Sagrada was based on.
That would have been cool.
I'm not sure what Máscara Sagrada is doing these days. Is it one of those things where he's kind of like, he got the spin-off outgrew the original? Because Máscarita Sagrada was actually a far better wrestler than Máscara Sagrada was. I saw him one night in Máscara Sagrada. If you can probably find it on YouTube somewhere, he was in a cage match in AAA that was absolutely phenomenal. Anyway, moving on. Part two of Ultima Lucha featured the seven-way elimination match for the Gift of the Gods Championship, featuring Sexy Star, Marty Martinez, Mariposa, Killshot, Nightclaw, Daga, and Sinestro de la Muerte. Now, Nightclaw was a debuting wrestler, and that's actually Flamita, who's a AAA and Dragon Gate Japan wrestler, and has been described by Dave Meltzer as one of the greatest aerial wrestlers in the world, comparing him to Rey Mysterio, it says here. So, interesting things to come maybe next year, but he was kind of a bit shoved in, really, into this match, but obviously it gives him a lot of momentum. He got the first two pinfalls, and you know, he got to debut in a Gift of the Gods Championship, which is obviously one of the most important things in Lucha Underground. Marcus, your thoughts on this match, which was won by Sexy Star?
Yeah, I thought debuting him like that, it was pretty cool. Obviously, he's definitely a high quality talent, and I would definitely like to see more from him. Maybe get him in a high feud, maybe with somebody like Cuerno down the line. But yeah, he looked good. As far as the match went, it was a pretty, you know, standard affair in the beginning, and towards the middle and end, we obviously got that storytelling between, you know, everything between Killshot and Moth, and that whole thing about the dog tags and their whole beef, and naturally the overall family turmoil towards Sexy Star with Marty the Moth and Mariposa. So you know, they continue their storyline great, and because they end up having one of the best matches of the year for the season, I should say, between her and Mariposa. So, you know, I think it was good, and I thought having Sexy Star win was both a pleasant surprise, and considering, you know, when we get to the latter part of the show and talk about rumors and stuff, I thought it was a great way to, you know, show solidarity for, you know, just all of their wrestlers in general and everything that they've done with Sexy Star since day one, showing that she's just as good as the boys as they do with all their talent, but mostly with her. And now she's the only luchadora to hold singles gold. So it was a cool moment.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And, you know, I was very negative towards this storyline at the beginning of the year. I wasn't keen on the Marty Martinez Mariposa reactions to Sexy Star because I thought they pushed too many buttons and it was a bit too near the knuckle for me. But having said that, they produced Mariposa and Sexy Star, produced my favourite match in North America this year. And also, this match was very, very good. And it told the story really, really well of bringing Sexy Star back into prominence. She's slayed her demons quite literally in this match and is now waiting for her world championship, or sorry, her Lucha Underground championship shot. Alex, what did you think of this match?
Yeah, well, just before the match, because I believe last time we did the podcast was just before Sexy Star Mariposa had that match, and we were talking about the storyline and whether it worked or not. And then after the match, I think I tweeted you guys being like, you know, the storyline. We may not have been huge fans of the storyline, but boy, did they pay it off well.
Yeah.
Like that match was tremendous. Yeah, just we hadn't had a chance to talk about that on the podcast. It's worth saying, like, yeah, it was an amazing match. Like, when, you know, women's wrestling is really getting talked about a lot more, especially in North America, that was fucking incredible, basically. this match, like, the Gift of the Gods match was really, like, really good match. Like, a really good debut for Nightclaw in the sense of he got a chance to sort of showcase what he was about. I believe he pinned a couple of guys and then got eliminated, and the other storyline sort of came together. And it was a good sort of showcase for bringing quite a few storylines together using, you know, sort of merging quite a few different things. Like Mark said as well, Sexy Star winning, it's a big statement, and it's, you know, it sets it up nicely for season three. There's been rumors, which we might discuss later on, but
yeah.
It's certainly, like, just from a non-spoiler perspective, it's just like, how are they going to deal with that going into season three, and the fact that you could have the first female Lucha Underground champion. I think I'm going to be a bit critical of the booking going into part three in places, but that was very well done and the right move, I think.
Yeah, we're going to keep kayfabe in this part of the story, and then we'll give you a warning when we're going to give spoilers out from the rumors that we've heard. So for now, but yeah, Sexy Star Mariposa. We did. Me and Chelsea actually talked about this match when we talked about the Dream Slam 1 review that me and Chelsea did a couple of months back, because we talked about the fact that the layout of this match was very similar to the layout of the Akira Kuta match on that particular card. I don't think it's as good as that one, but I certainly think it's up there with one of the best female brawls I've ever seen, and possibly, you know, certainly I think one of the best possibly the best female wrestling match I've seen this year in North America, definitely. Anyway, moving on, Mil Muertes then defeated King Creano in a death match where the crowd started chanting, "We want death." Really, lads? Do you? Okay, fair enough. 30 minutes and 48 seconds. This was maybe not Muertes' best performance or Creano's best performance, because I think we've seen that much stuff go on around the arena, and the stakes were so high for these matches that everyone went to the floor a bit too often for my taste, if you see what I mean. And I think this was perhaps a bridge too far after we'd seen everything flying around the building for the previous 20 minutes, and you have another match that flies around the building. But not to take away from an incredible effort from Muertes and Cuerno. Alex, what did you think of these two and their year?
Yeah, it's funny we're laughing about the death thing, like Cuerno didn't technically kill Mil Muertes already at Lucha Underground, which is one of my favourite moments of the season, where in the vignette where it cut to the cabinet on his wall and he just had Mil Muertes in there hung on his wall. It was quite brilliant. The match itself was sort of paying off essentially a story they'd been building for the entire season, with Cuernos had been recruited basically to stop Phoenix early on while Muertes was champion. And then back in the second half of the season, be interested to hear what you guys think of Muertes's year, because in terms of the season, I mean, because he started off so he was the top guy, literally he was sat on a throne as the champion overlooking the temple. And then the shift, it sort of shifted the focus towards Matanza. And like, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but it felt like they were setting up, for instance, Muertes against Pentagon.
Yeah.
That seemed to be something they were really actively doing, you know, and I believe in the season premiere, Pentagon Jr. ran in, broke Muertes' arm, Like they were really setting it up, and then Matanza came in, and he sort of took on that role instead, and Pentagon started going after him instead, and they sort of just forgot about the Muertes and Pentagon Jr. thing. I don't know if it's. I know Muertes and Matanza ended up having a really good graver consequences match, which they built too well, like with those two. But just wonder if you guys think maybe Muertes sort of almost not got forgotten about, but sort of got sidelined a little
lost
bit.
Lost some shine. I would agree. I think it's difficult when you are the dominant character and then you are no longer the dominant character. It can be a big drop off if you're not careful. Yeah. And if in a historical reference for you, look at King Kong Bundy between WrestleMania 2 and WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, very good. Good one.
Marcus, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I think, again, sharing the sentiments of Alex, it kind of felt like Muertes, because he had such a strong start, especially with that sick throne and how they, you know, shot things with him at the beginning of the season, and basically saying all the other guys that were in, you know, on the show last season that aren't here this season are sitting on his throne with their skulls. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, he had such a strong start. And I think what ended up happening is, you know, normally you just see, you know, you got your baby face and your heels, but you have like one type baby face and then a heel, and then you get to, you know, the tit for tat and back and forth. I think what ended up happening, you kind of tried to have three balls in the air in terms of, you know, the dominant forces on the roster with Muertes, you know, then Pentagon, and then Matanza. And then I think, you know, like you said, in that whole juggling act, I think, you know, Muertes ended up taking a back seat just because of the consistency of dominance that we got from Matanza and you know, Pentagon was, you know, had a lot of things going on, but he was more consistent. So I think, you know, Muertes naturally ended up just taking a back seat, even though with Katrina at his side, he's always in the spotlight one way or the other. So, but yeah, the match, not to take away anything from those guys, I think they, you know, had a pretty decent match, much like going back to what James said about the, you know, everything about going outside, and we had seen a lot of that by now. And but I mean, like Alex said, it was paying off, something we had seen from the top of the season. Quenno got recruited, and, you know, being the king, calling yourself the king, you have to have, you know, the hardware to prove it. And he can't, you know, he wasn't going to be content just sitting back and playing second fiddle, you know, to the guy that was holding the one thing he wanted. So, like, that was paying off. But, you know, it wasn't the best match on these three shows by any means, but, I thought it delivered. Although it was kind of hard to believe that anybody could, you know, is going to come out on a great end of a death match with, you know, Muertes, considering the fact that it's become quite obvious that he will not die.
Yeah, yeah. So it's difficult, really. Paints you in a bit of a corner.
Yeah.
Right then, we'll move on to night three, which was probably the two-hour special that they did. To open the show, Jack Evans, Johnny Mundo, and PJ Black, World Underground, I think that's their name, isn't it?
Worldwide Underground.
Worldwide Underground, thank you, Marcus. They defended their Trios Championship against Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix, arguably the best Trios team in the world right now. In a really, really good match, because it wasn't all spot heavy. There was a lot of storytelling going in this match. Evans, Mundo, and Black's egos ran wild in the best way possible, and there was a lot of stuff going on with this. So, Marcus, what did you think of this match?
I really liked it. There was the whole season has kind of been, we saw a lot of tit for tat back and forth over the Trios titles. Obviously, we started Ivelisse and her boys, and how they kind of basically literally got screwed out of those titles and went to Worldwide Underground, and looked like they were taking over. I think bringing them together was great, just because, like you said, that the grandiose arrogance is just one of their best points. And then putting Phoenix, Drago, and Aerostar together, I thought it was another stroke of genius, just because of where they kind of always been more or less, you know, on the show. And Phoenix obviously is high profile in terms of just things he's done in Underground period, but the match was great, and it wasn't exactly like what we got with how they, you know, defeated Mysterio and Azteca and Puma, because that obviously that storyline was leading to something else. But you know, it was a great match, and it was really cool to see, you know, Phoenix, Dragon, Aerostar get some goals, specifically Dragon and Aerostar. So yeah, I really like the match, and it's going to be interesting seeing where those guys go, because like you said, they're arguably one of the best, if not the best, trios teams in the world right now.
Yeah, Lucha Underground champions and reigning king of trios in Chikara. Their title will change hands, though, this weekend. As we speak, King of Trios is happening in Eastern Pennsylvania. And I have a sneaky suspicion Sendai Girls might win that. But that's my particular take on that particular tournament. And I'm sure we'll talk about it soon. Because usually do a King of Trios review. However, we've been a bit busy this summer, and it's come early. So I'm sure we'll talk about King of Trios at some point. But Alex, what did you think of this particular match? And yeah, Aerostar, Drago and Phoenix, are they the best trios team in the world?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to... I'm sure the elite would disagree with you, but I would probably, I think, the stuff these three can do is just insane. Like, I like that they were used as the trios team in Ultima Lucha. It made sense that they were the challengers. With there's been, you know, Aerostar and Drago have had a thing with PJ and Jack Evans for part of the season, which again slightly got sidelined, but they came back to it. And what was the point I was just gonna make? I've loved the Jack Evans, Johnny Mundo, PJ Black thing. Like, they just, the way they just sort of recruited Johnny Mundo, and they just went like so over the top. Like, if we're talking about a trios match, I'd want to see like those three against the elite would be fucking hilarious. Like,
air guitars and super kicks.
Yeah, be the most over the top thing. Like, and yeah, I love the air guitar thing. I love the fact that they brought it in. They started doing it in the ring, and they put the sound effect in. Like,
yeah,
so over the top. But yes, yeah, so, like you say, a lot of, as well as being a good match, they brought in the storyline thing with, they did very well with Angelico when, because I believe he legit got injured in Mexico, so they had to like write him out of the storyline some way. So this was like a nice way to sort of bring him back and pay that off, and kind of imply who was behind him getting injured in the storyline. So yeah, like you say, they brought a lot of stuff together and then had the feel good win at the end. Where, like, again, I feel like Aerostar, Drago, and even Phoenix have been a little bit sidelined over the second half of the season. So this sets them up well going into season three, because they are obviously, like, I mean, they're three of the best best high flyers in the world, unquestionably. Phoenix especially is, like, I mean, he's some ridiculous age, like 24, isn't he? Like,
yeah,
and he's that good already. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I realize that's because he's, you know, a luchador, so he's been wrestling since he was like 7, probably, but you know, still pretty insane.
Yeah, they are exceptionally good. And actually, just thinking about it, the only place where the Elite and Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix could actually wrestle each other is in Chikara, because of contracts, because Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix are AAA employees. They're allowed to go wrestle for Chikara, and the Elite are New Japan employees, but they're allowed to go wrestle for Chikara as well. But they wouldn't be able to meet in Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor and New Japan have deals with CMLL, who are AAA's biggest competitors in Mexico.
Last year's final was Aerostar, Drago, Phoenix against the Bucks and AJ.
It was an absolutely phenomenal match.
Pun intended.
It was. They were just doing ridiculous Phoenix and AJ Styles, just doing ridiculous stuff, because it's Phoenix and AJ Styles.
Yeah, they are both quite good at this wrestling.
Yeah, like AJ slipped off the, I think on the first night, AJ missed the phenomenal forearm because he slipped on the top rope. And then every night slipped in exactly the same manner.
And then, yeah,
on purpose.
In the final, he slipped off the top rope. The Bucks fell over trying to get in the ring. I'm sure they did something where they super kicked the top rope.
Yes, that was right.
Like, they were claiming it was the rope's fault.
Yeah, he's even phenomenal looking like he's not.
Yeah. there you go. Then we move on. We can move on after this match, because I think we've talked a lot about that. And I think this is really possibly, these six guys are where you could see a lot of action in season three, certainly. Yeah. But yeah, moving on. El Dragon Azteca Jr., who's had an interesting debut here, defeated Black Lotus in this mysterious storyline that's been developing for quite some time in Lucha Underground. And Black Lotus making her debut, and I don't really know an awful lot about her. Well, for a start, she doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I guess this may be her professional wrestling debut as well. Does anyone else got any information on Black Lotus?
No, I've assumed, though, that she was an actress, Daria was, because she was just sort of affiliated with him. She looked good if it was her debut, but she was like, it looked like a, you know, someone who hadn't been a worker for that long, if without meaning that in an insulting way, because everything she did well, but she wasn't like,
crisp, you know, green. You know what I
mean? Yeah. Everything she did was crisp, but it wasn't like, you can just tell when someone's been working a while and someone who hasn't, basically.
Yeah, she wasn't laying stuff in, basically. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Alex, what did you think of these two?
Yeah, well, I think El Dragon Azteca Jr.'s had a, you know, he's the guy in that team who no one really knew as much about for obvious reasons, but he was affiliated with Rey, and then Prince Puma came in, and they were the trios team, and obviously people know more about Rey Mysterio and Ricochet than they do about this guy. But he was like, I'm trying to think back to which trios match it was when he first pulled off that insane DDT, and like, me and my friend were watching it, and we just like leapt off the couch. We were just like, that is insane. he's been a real breath of fresh air. And yeah, I mean, the Black Lotus thing, like you say, has been building for two seasons, was this really anticipated debut. And then 4 minutes they got, like, it just, yeah, it was, this was a massive letdown, I thought. Again, I don't want to be too negative, but it felt like this big story they've been building with, you know, the Black Lotus thing and the El Dragon Azteca thing with him being killed in the first season, because it's Lucha Underground, they do that. but they've been building it like behind the scenes as this big thing, and then it just was a 4 minute match that seemed set up Pentagon's return and remind you that Pentagon is a nutter, basically. it seemed like a bit of a waste. I don't know what you guys think.
A wasted opportunity, perhaps.
Yes.
I'd like to see more out of this, but I can understand if you've got someone who's new and you're trying to get all her best stuff in, it maybe not have been a bad idea, but then again, maybe you could have saved it to the next season when she's had a couple more months training and she's got some more stuff to put in.
But you can have a short match, and then you could have had Dario get involved in some way, and she wins. Then this seemed to help neither of them, it ending the way it did.
Marcus, what did you think of this?
Same. Obviously, like Alex said, she looked good, but obviously she had points that she, you know, wanted to hit, and she hit them, and we didn't get much past that. As far as Azteca goes, I think he's a great talent. I think he's had a lot of moments, much like Alex talked about with that DDT. But I think perhaps, you know, he's going to benefit now more from this storyline being over. Because you had this storyline going on, and at the same time, I think he got kind of, you know, put in the back of the back, if you will, between everything that was going on with Mysterio and Puma, which we'll get to later. But I think he's going to benefit from this kind of being over, and if it's over, and him being able to really maybe get into a feud with somebody, you know, like a Puma or something on the show, and so he can show more of his talents and more consistent one-on-one action. But much like Alex said, this was kind of disappointing, and obviously it was kind of just kind of got fed to the dark wolf, if you will, and the Pentagon. So hopefully it's over, because I think both of them can benefit from some distance between each other.
Okay, yeah. Right then, moving on then. To end that sequence, as we should probably explain, Pentagon Jr., I should say, came down to the ring to start beating up El Dragon Azteca and Black Lotus and broke both their arms, as he does. And then cut a promo explaining that he is no longer Pentagon Jr. He is now Pentagon Dark. And he explained how he had gone to face his greatest fears, I believe. And he was no longer what he was. And then he called out Matanza Cueto to challenge for the championship, as it was his title shot. And they had one hell of a match where Pentagon was the dominant force throughout the match. And it was the first time we'd seen anyone manhandle Matanza, and basically the first time we'd seen him sell anything, really. So this was definitely interesting. Alex, what were your thoughts on this match as far as... because we don't see Matanza every week, and it was interesting to see him do something different, I think.
Yeah, well, it made sense in the storyline of obviously Pentagon had to go away and be built back up, you know, that... early on in Matanza's run where he, like, basically beat the crap out of Pentagon Jr., sent him to the hospital, threw him through the announce table and broke it, which had never happened before. Like, it was kind of like a window. Like, who got thrown through the window in season one? Was it Del Rio?
Yeah.
It was Del Rio went through the window. Yeah. So it was that kind of moment when the table broke, because it was like, no, we'd never seen it before. But yeah, so it made sense that the Pentagon came back with this, you know, fire in his belly, if you like, and he was going straight after Matanza and not letting him rest. Like, although Lucha Underground is not like done as like a sports style thing, if you think of it that way, it makes sense that he would just go after him and not let him breathe and just keep beating him up, basically. Yeah. Because he's the bigger guy. And yeah, it was not necessarily what a lot of people were expecting, I think, for how the match was going to play out, but it was really well done up until the finish, I'm going to say, because should they not have pulled the trigger on Pentagon? As he's got to be like the hottest guy in the promotion now. Like, he's so over with the crowd there in the temple. It seemed a bit deflating when he just lost, especially after the storyline they've been building with him coming back, and he's going to come back and he's going to conquer the monster. And then he didn't.
I think there comes a point though where some guys are so over they don't need a championship. I mean, like, Roddy Piper is the classic example. You know, people complain, oh, Piper never won a world championship, so he was never any good. And it's like, no, he made more money than anyone else but Hulk Hogan. He was that good. You know, it just because... Taker doesn't need a championship. And I think Pentagon is kind of morphing into Lucha Underground's Undertaker. You know, I think he's that dark character. He's not a face. He's not a heel. He's just a bit crazy. And he sells it incredibly well. And I think I can agree with you in the sense that it was a bit flattening, but he got his heat back in such a strong way at the end of the show.
I think not to interrupt, but I think it might have helped if he would have took that that Wrath of the Gods maybe twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that would have, you know, kind of showed like, oh, wow, this like that Pentagon Jr. wouldn't have kicked out of that, you know.
Yeah,
I think that would have helped.
Yeah, I mean, just get him over a bit more in defeat. Yeah, Marcus, what did you think of this match?
You know, I wasn't expecting, you know, Pentagon to just come out and be like, no, we're having this match now, but it was great, and it really showed, you know, that reinvigorated mindset. You know, after seeing him go through all those trials with Vampiro and everything, and being, you know, basically tortured back in the recovery, and full strength in that whole fight in the cave, and that those things were great. So, you know, I think, like you said, he really got himself, you know, back over. Even if he, you know, even in defeat, this guy is just gold. I mean, the temple is in love with this guy, and then I think, you know, most of your credit, like you said, he's very much evolving into that guy that doesn't need a title, because every time he comes out, it's gangbusters. So, but the match itself, it was great. I like the fact that, like you said, we hadn't got somebody really taking it to Matanza like this here. But like I just said, I think it would have really helped if he kind of would have took that Wrath of the Gods maybe twice, just to put a little bit more emphasis on, like, this is not the same guy you was dealing with before. Like, he took everything you had the last time you guys fought, and you damn near killed him But this time, this is a completely different guy, because that's really what he was trying to get over in that Pentagon dark promo. So, like Alex said, it would have been great to see him kind of get the title, but I kind of understand where they're going with it. And obviously, somebody's going to take Matanz out. I don't know who, but hopefully that has a more impactful finish, if you will, than we got here. But still a great showing. And like you said before, Pentagon got all his heat, if you will, back at the end of the night.
Yeah. Right then, we'll move on to the next match, which was kind of a bit of a palate cleanser, I guess. It was only 6 minutes and 48 seconds, but Taya versus Ivelisse to find out who was the top female in Lucha Underground, which is kind of a bit underdone because obviously Sexy Star is the top female in Lucha Underground as she holds the championship, the Gift of the Gods championship. So it's kind of a little bit of a storyline, and it's a storyline that's developed over the year, but it was more about Katrina and Ivelisse than Taya and Ivelisse, I think. Marcus, what were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, another you know, short affair. It would have been far cooler to see these girls have a lengthier match, especially with Ivelisse has been basically with a trios team and trying to maintain and get through all that strife that they've gone through with that. So, I want to see her get back into more singles action, and Taya has just been fantastic since she's been with Mundo, and a great presentation, and she's one of my favorite characters on the show. So I would have liked to see them have more time here, but obviously, like you said, it ended up coming down to more of Ivelisse's whole beef with Katrina, which was a great moment that she had, just seeing her in action past the lick of death and everything, even though we did get that, of course. But yeah, I would like to kind of revisit that whole thing between Ivelisse and Ty with more time down the road. But obviously, this kind of took precedent, and this is going into a new direction with Katrina. So it was a really cool moment when it came down to it. But again, this was another part in this whole thing of the second installment of Ultimate Lucha, where one of these matches could have benefited from more time.
Yeah, I think so as well. As done Ivelisse's outside of Lucha Underground career, no end of good. She is signed for World Wondering Stardom this September and goes on tour with the Japanese company. And I'm really looking forward to some of the match possibilities you've got there. Her and Mio Otani could do something really special.
Yeah, hopefully she stays healthy.
Yeah, I'm sure she will do. Alex, what do you think of Taya and Ivelisse and the Katrina interference?
Yeah, I didn't actually know that about Ivelisse. That's awesome news. Like, she really deserves that. I mean, pretty much would just echo what you guys have said. Like, it would have been nice to see them get more time. I think they built the match well, and then it was a bit of a shame that they didn't let them go out and have longer, particularly because they're both such talents. Like, Taya's been, like, say, one of the best characters of the season. Like, it's really like a breakout star, if you like, from the second season. I think they could have had a really good match if they were given even just another 5 minutes or something. So that was the biggest shame, if you like. But with the time they did get, they did, they had a good match. And then, like you say, it seemed to be designed to then set up this Katrina interference and carry on the Katrina Ivelisse thing. That was really interesting, the sense of Katrina coming in wrestling gear, which sets up like she's maybe going to be an in-ring competitor in the next season, which is really interesting direction and should be really exciting going forward.
It is interesting to set up a bunch of characters who aren't wrestlers, who can now be wrestlers because they've had time to learn how to wrestle.
Plus, like, she's, she's such a strong character and everyone really likes the character. It's just, you've now, before it gets stale what she was doing, being the manager and everything, it's like, right, let's bring her into the ring now and she can do things there. Like, then they've played that very well, like building her like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, the pioneers of that kind of action were the Glorious Ladies of Wrestling, and they have just been re-announced for a new season for Netflix for next year. Yeah, and Glorious Ladies, I believe the producer of Orange is the New Black, one of her first jobs in TV was on Glorious Ladies of Wrestling, and she's brought it back. And I think she's definitely involved in the documentary they did on it. But anyway, we'll move on from there to the main event, which was Rey Mysterio Jr. defeating Prince Puma in 16 minutes and 37 seconds in a really well-layered storytelling match that did incredible things for Lucha Underground as far as match quality is concerned, after a couple of weeks of things that were good, but this really put it over the edge. Alex, your thoughts?
Yeah, they're quite good at wrestling, these two, aren't they?
such new guys, too.
I mean, it was what everyone wanted it to be. Like, it was a dream match. They played it like a dream match, and they just worked it really well. And like we said in the last time we spoke about Lucha, like, Rey looks like a completely different guy, like, from what he did just a few years ago. Like, and he looked not like the Rey of old, but like he was keeping up with Prince Puma, and they were able to do like a lot of crazy things. And like the way they set up the finish, where he did like, I don't even know how you describe, like a front Frankensteiner, spiked him on his head.
Kind of like a West Coast pop, but stationary rather than with the springboard, because I don't think he can do springboards anymore. So I'm quite...
No, he can't. He can't off the top rope.
So he's doing it off the corner rope. So it was kind of like a vicious West Coast pop.
Wait, he finished it with the West Coast pop, but I
how he originally did it, right?
Yeah. I meant the kind of just before that. The 619 where he did like a front flip. It's really difficult to describe. He set it up early on.
Go and watch it.
I'm so going back and watching this. Yeah,
they set it up early on in the match, basically, where Rey tried it and Prince Puma avoided it, and then they brought it back at the end. It's just like, that is nuts. How do you even think to do something like that? It was great. You know what I'm going to say? Like, was it the right thing to have Rey win? That would be my only question, really. Like, the match itself was tremendous, but you wonder, should they have had the new younger guy go over? As much as, you know, it's great to see Rey in there and he's the legend and everything like that, and you don't begrudge him standing tall at the end of a show like that. It's like, you want to be building the new generation, if you like.
I'll agree with you to an extent, because I would normally say that, but equally I'll also say, but it's another story you can build for next year.
Mm.
This is one of those matches. WWE do it from time to time. Actually, CM Punk and John Cena at Money in the Bank 2011 was one of those matches. It wasn't necessarily watched by that many people, but it's a reference you can call back to, and then it gets this mythical status. And that's part of the draw. And I think that's possibly what they were trying to achieve here with Puma losing. Plus also, this was the time of the rumour mill, wasn't it, when they recorded this? And we knew that...
Yeah, I did wonder that.
WWF was sniffing around. So, yeah. Marcus, what did you think of this? Well, kind of not a classic, but it was certainly exceptionally good.
Yeah, it was fantastic for me. I had so many expectations coming in this match, and I think they, you know, lived up to all of them for me, especially Rey, who really one of my favorite moments of the year, one of my favorite moments this season, Lucha Underground, was Rey's debut, just because that crowd went nuts, and it really felt like he was getting all the admiration and glory that he had, you know, has built for himself over the year, and just that reception he got, I just felt good as a fan. Like, it really resonated with me. So, you know, when it came to this match, you know, it really, like Alex said, Rey Mysterio's, you know, obviously older and everything, but it kind of reminds me of that whole Mick Foley thing, was that saying, I may not be as good as I once was, but tonight I'll be as good as I've ever been.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. It was fantastic. I mean, these two didn't miss a beat. Everything was just... It was nuts, and hearing Alex go back and talk about it, I can't wait to go back and watch this match again. I think it really, you know, going back through everything, we talked about before throughout the whole the three shows, this really, you know, capped everything off. I mean, if you're gonna finish, this is how you should, you know, finish your show. So, it was so cool to see Rey pull out all those old bags of tricks in that West Coast pop, that original West Coast pop, and see him pull it off like he did. And much like you talked about, James, like, you know, normally, you know, it would be cool to see, you know, the younger guy go, but this is Rey Mysterio. And obviously, like you said, they can build off this. And obviously, like, we're going to get to later with the whole rumor mill that might have came into play. But, you know, either way, it was just a fantastic match.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, I have to say. I think it was good. And it was, this is terrifying me, but I have now been watching Rey Mysterio for 25 years. And I'm sure 91, 25 years. I've seen at least 25 years worth of his matches. And the guy is still making up new stuff, really. Just incredible stuff. Actually, one move we didn't mention, the Canadian Destroyer by Pentagon on Matanza.
Yeah.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, that, as far as crazy moves in this particular series of shows was, that was insane. Because how do you do that to a guy that size? Because actually the stress is on Matanza to do the backflip or it doesn't work.
Well, I mean, the guy who plays Matanza is like an insane athlete. I think he's like, is he a former Olympian or something?
Yeah,
he represented
Guam at the Olympics, didn't he?
Yeah, so I mean, you see, like, he can do like a standing shooting star press and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's all on the guy taking it, the Canadian Destroyer. So it's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts that he even agreed to do it, to be fair.
Mind you, Sanjay, I'm listening to a view with the guy who invented it, and whose name I can't remember, PT Williams. Yeah, yes. I was listening to PT Williams, and when he went to TNA, the first guy he wanted to do was Sanjay Dutt, and Sanjay was like, "You're mad, no way." And then he did it, and Sanjay was like, "That was really easy." So I suppose, yeah, I don't know. I'm still saying, though, that the essential is you're doing a backflip to land on your head. So it's not that simple. But anyway, yes, so that was really the end of the matches. We did have some other vignettes involving our good friend Joey Ryan, as Officer Joey Ryan.
Love that guy so much.
I think how many times has he won the Ironman DDT DDT Ironman Championship in the last 2 weeks? About 14.
It keeps popping up on Twitter.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm sure it was an 8-year-old girl, the Young Bucks. Somebody else has won it too. They had the DDT had the Battle Royal at their big show at Ryugyu Hall last weekend, and Joey Ryan won the Battle Royal and then got pinned in the press conference afterwards.
Joey Ryan is just, I think we said in the special, like, such a perfect guy for Lucha Underground. Like, the fact that they made him an undercover cop as well was just brilliant.
Actually, if you think back to it, of the guys that got released from TNA who went on to have great careers after being in TNA, Joey Ryan was the first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Completely forgot he was even there.
He was there for about 3 months. He did
Gut Check.
Gut Check, and he lost on Gut Check, and then there was such a popularity vote they brought him back anyway, and he ended up being referee for the Knockouts division for a while, and then he just got let go, and then his career exploded.
Yeah.
So yeah, just the way it goes, I guess. Obviously a lot more work to it than that, because there was all those matches in PWG that he did incredibly well with. But we're now moving on to the preview of Season 3, and there was some big news released by Lucha Underground, which was that Lucha Underground will now be available on iTunes TV from now on, from Series 3 onwards, which means that it is legally available in the United Kingdom. Not that me and Alex have been watching it illegally in the United Kingdom, have we, Alex?
Nope.
No.
I've got nothing. How did
you... I'm sure Marcus stuck it on VHS for us and posted it to us, didn't you, Marcus?
Of course.
There you go, you see.
Yeah.
I was always looking out for my boys.
There you go. Thanks, man. Appreciate that. So, yeah, so Marcus has been keeping us fed with VHS copies of Lucha Underground, but we can now actually pay for it and watch it ourselves. So that'll be really good. And you
can,
too.
It'd be much easier than having to wait the weeks for it to be shipped across from Marcus.
Yes, and Marcus could spend his time doing other things. So let's go to the rumor mill for Lucha Underground Season 3. Where should we start? Should we start with Prince Puma? Because that's the one we've been talking about the most. It seems like for the most part of 2016, will Prince Puma get signed by the WWE? the rumor mill has been on this since about January, and I've always kind of been wary of it because, as far as I know, the Lucha Underground deal is a 7-year watertight deal, which means that WWE would actually have to buy him out of his contract to do that. He's allowed to go wrestle in New Japan because, obviously, a Lucha Underground TV tapings are, well, few and far between. They tend to do a week, much like TNA do. So, yeah, what's the thoughts about this, Alex? Because you've been following Ricochet stroke Prince Puma for quite some time. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I can't remember which one we spoke, one of the Japanese specials we did, we spoke about.
Invasion Attack, that, I think.
Yeah, where I read somewhere that he can't sign with WWE until this season three. I believe he's there for the whole of season three. I've tried to stay pretty spoiler free, so I'm not sure what, but I believe he finished up his commitments at the Ultima Lucha Tray, I assume it will be. It'll be Therese. Called. Therese. So I believe he can't sign for a promotion like a WWE, and probably someone, TNA, will be included in this, who have TV deals until that season is aired on TV. But whether that's totally accurate, I don't know, and how that pertains to, like you said, the fact they signed a 7-year deal and stuff like that. I guess we'll find out after the season three finale whether he suddenly shows up on NXT TV, basically.
Have you heard? Sorry, Kim.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I mean, he's gonna end up in NXT if he can. I mean, you know he is. Like, he's like one of the most sought after guys in the industry, and with the way the signing process has changed with WWE, with the way NXT's come in, you're seeing all these guys who you never thought would, you know, who work styles you never thought would actually end up in that promotion, you know, Neville being perhaps the other obvious example. You've got to assume he's going to pop up there if he can.
And Marcus, have you heard anything else on this particular story?
No, I haven't heard too many more rumblings than you guys have. Before everything started kind of happening over these last couple of years, it would have all but, you know, chunked this up to being a simple rumor, you know, because like Alex said, before this would have been, damn near, inconceivable to see somebody like Ricochet, go to WWE and thrive. But, as we've seen, the door is basically open now for anyone and everyone to kind of just bring these guys in and taking full advantage of, the top prospects. So it's very likely that he could end up there. I would personally like to see him, kind of stay in Lucha Underground, but that's just me being a little, selfish, the temple. But, it's all dependent on him. Obviously he has goals for his career, and if, he kind of, tires of having that mask on, but, that 7-year deal, that's also a thing. When you sign those deals, you get locked in, and, we could talk all day about, different wrestlers down the years and things that have happened because of legalities with contracts and this, that, and the third. So, if he's going to, go, hopefully everything is a smooth transition and there's no, burned bridges or anything. Yeah. But, I would like to see him have a great season, a full arc over this season, much like, we got with Pentagon Jr. this season.
Okay. I'm pretty much agreement with you there. I think, Prince Puma as a character is still fascinating, still has plenty of things left to do, certainly Lucha Underground. And getting back to the championship, there's a story for you. Taking on Rey Mysterio again and trying to beat him, there's another story for you. So we'll see what happens in season three. The next one that I have heard of, and I am pretty sure is damn tootin' true, is Mariposa, of course, is actually Cheerlead Melissa. And Cheerlead Melissa is the owner and sort of president of Stardom USA. Now, Io Shirai, Mayu Iwatani, and Kairi Hojo happen to be on tour in California, and apparently were at the Lucha Underground Studios. So that means that the Stardom girls possibly could be in Lucha Underground. Have you heard anything about this, Alex?
I saw a little thing that I think we've danced around this on other Lucha things, where I said, I've seen a spoiler that James will probably be very happy with.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, so I think, yeah, I don't know how much they're going to be involved, but certainly I'm sure, like, I've read something that they show up, basically, on one of the shows, as to what they do, as to how that plays into storylines, how long they stay, if they're, you know, going to be their working matches, I don't know, but they definitely pop up. I know that much.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, when you have Io Shirai there, you have the best aerial wrestler in the world. So it would be interesting to see her actually be able to have matches with some of the best other aerial wrestlers in the world. And, you know, as a trio, they are absolutely amazing to watch. So if we could have Aerostar, Drago, and Phoenix, and they brought them in as Dario brought them in as, like, who's the best trio in the world, I would really love to see that, even if it was just one shot match.
Yeah, well, you've got a few things there, like you say, with the trios thing. You've got, you know, you've got Sexy Stars, Gift of the Gods champion. That could, you know, she could end up winning the main title. Then you're bringing in people like Io Shirai and Kairi Hojo, who could challenge it. It's like you can really be making a statement about women's wrestling if they did something like that at the top of the card.
Yeah, and get some impetus back from WWE and NXT, I think, as well. Yes, Marcus, have you heard anything on this story, or would you like to see that particular lineup of ladies going into Lucha Underground?
Yeah, I haven't heard too much on this particular story. I find myself these days trying to stay, I guess, spoiler-free, especially with Lucha Underground, just because I enjoy it more. I think there's, you know, far more to be enjoyed with Lucha Underground. I just like letting them surprise me, so... But I think I would love to see that. I think that's great. Obviously, there's no line drawn in the sand in terms of separation of a male and female on the show, which has, you know, been a great benefit to Lucha Underground. But obviously, you know, for me, adding more women to the roster overall, I think it is great. Obviously, somebody we necessarily didn't touch on because I think she kind of flew under the radar this season. I think Cobra Moon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we got her, and obviously with Mariposa. So, you know, having her, you know, call in, you know, get some friends, you know, by her side. And, you know, obviously they're going to build some type of connection with her lineage and all that. They always do great stuff with that. So, you know, I have full confidence that they could do something great with them coming in. It's just, the direction they take them. But I'm all for it.
Yeah. Have we heard any other rumors or anything you'd like to discuss on this, boys?
Not rumors, but I suppose looking forward in the sense of there's a few storyline threads that are still hanging from season two, which I hope they're going to expand on more. I mean, we ended the season with Dario Cueto getting arrested. So, but then he had a big smile on his face that implied that he actually wanted to be arrested. So it'd be interesting to see how that pays off. You know, this whole Councilman Delgado thing as well, which yeah. I was a little bit disappointed they didn't do anything with that in the finale. Like, it seemed to be building to something, but I assume that's going to go into season three.
Yeah.
What was the other one I was just going to say? Pentagon dropping Vampiro as his master as well, happened at the end of Ultima Lucha. So that's an interesting apprentice one.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see how they go forward with that as well.
Exactly. The Kill Shot ever get his dog tag back?
Yeah, that's true.
Kill Shot with Marty DeMoss, that whole dog tag beef.
It is. There is just so many storylines that go on, and they're all compelling. They are all so well written, and it is difficult to keep up a lot of the time with Lucha Underground and see all the stories that are coming forward. And they're so well done as well. There is good basic wrestling storytelling, and they never take you out the moment. That's the key thing for me. Even with all the cinematic vignettes, to me, the program is so solid in its storytelling, it gets away with an awful lot, perhaps more than it should do.
Mm. But I think they've created a universe that everyone buys into. You know, it is what it is. Like, it's kind of silly and ludicrous at times, but everyone fully buys into the concept of it. You know, the superhero and the crime drama stuff, and the fact that there are these behind the scenes, the fact that people get killed and stuff like that.
Exactly, all the supernatural, yeah.
Yeah, so there's, yeah, they've just created something that's entirely their own. They've basically gone, they've just embraced kind of the wackiness of wrestling, I guess, and really they've just play off that so well, and everyone just completely buys into it.
But they've taken it seriously.
Yeah, exactly. In their universe, it all makes complete sense.
Yeah, this is the thing when you see. I think this is probably the reason why the Final Deletion for TNA's worked so well for them successfully. I mean, I'm not a fan of it, but I see why.
Your mouth out there. Are you not a fan of Broken Matt's Broken Condition?
No. No, I'm not.
Are you not going to get Skarsgård the Dilapidated Boat merchandise? Is that what you're saying?
No. No, I'm not. But it has been successful because they have taken it seriously.
Mm.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about it on the phone the other night, and I've not heard him produce so many swear words in such a short period of time. Maybe it's genetic. I don't know.
What about the Final Deletion?
Yeah, my dad hates it.
I will say,
on
a slight side note, anyone who hasn't heard Broken Matt Hardy on Chris Jericho's podcast from a few weeks ago... is so good. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. He is fully committed to this character.
Oh, the effort he put in. I'm not knocking his dedication to the character and the effort he's putting in. It's just I don't like it. That's just me.
Yeah.
But they have taken it seriously. So, yeah. Marcus, you know, what do you think about? I know everyone talk about Final Deletion because everyone's talked about Final Deletion, but what do you think of Final Deletion, just as an aside?
Yeah, it was... It was awesome insanity to the highest levels, and I think a lot of me having to like it is, like you said, due to Matt Hardy's overall commitment and the consistency of it, and he's really delved off into this character so deep now that it's almost par for the course. And to see this guy, you know, who's been wrestling for years now, basically reinvent himself and turn everything on his head, now is one of the best to a lot of people. One of the things to tune in for on the show, and you got one of the highest most watched things for the for the company overall in years, know it says a lot. So like I said, I appreciate the creativity and the commitment and the extent that they went to pull that stuff off. So it works for me.
Here's a question for you then, just to wrap this off and bring us back to Lucha Underground. Would the Final Deletion have worked if Lucha Underground hadn't come first?
Ooh.
Oh, that is a great question.
Who would like to go first on that question?
Yeah, I might talk this to the Alex, man.
Throw me to the wolves. Probably not. It's tough to say. I mean, we'll never know, really. But I think the success of Lucha Underground has encouraged people to do more out there stuff like that. For sure, like you say, the fact that they fully committed to it and they did something different. I don't know if they would have had the confidence to do it if they hadn't seen the success that Lucha Underground has.
Mm, definitely. I think that's an interesting kind of thought process. Marcus, do you want to have a go at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the presence and the things that we've seen from Lucha Underground has created a certain comfort level, obviously, with the reception that Underground has garnered amongst wrestling fans overall as a great alternative has created a certain atmosphere around it. But like I said, I take my hats off to the Hardys and everybody involved with Jeremy Borash and those boys, and I think definitely Underground has given a little bit of leeway for them to, get a little bit more insane than we've seen. But to their, to the Hardy's credit, they have always been off their rockers to a certain extent when it's come to things. And I just think, they kind of, trusted Matt to kind of take this thing, full tilt, and that's what he's done. And, it's great that we live in a time now where this stuff is, can happen, even though you never want to see things get taken too far and too outlandish where people can get killed. But on one show, actually, people can. But just to get fans really, take their mind off everything or really be able to escape into this stuff for, you know, however long it is, you know, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, what have you. I think it's cool, and it's kind of what wrestling has always been for a lot of fans. So, you know, in that regard, I think it's I think they both benefit each other.
Well, there you go. Right then, we're going to have to call that it for today. We hope you've enjoyed our show looking at Lucha Underground Season 2 and looking forward to Season 3. I would like to say thank you to Paradox Kid himself, Marcus Green. That's your handle on Twitter, is it not, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Great show. Love it. Whatever we talk about next, we're not completely exhausted from the New Japan stuff.
And Alex Watt 187 of Unilad, that's your Twitter handle. I got it right this time, didn't I?
You did get it right, yeah.
I'm practicing this week.
Yeah, cheers for having me. As always, looking forward to Season 3 of Lucha, which starts on Wednesday, I believe. We really haven't had much time between seasons at all.
No, we haven't. It's been out there.
Yeah, I think it's more episodes, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Wow, there you go. So you can go find it on iTunes now, and you can watch it. Thank you very much for listening today, and thank you very much for listening to the WrestleTalk Podcast Network, where you can find all our other shows, The Finn Martin Report and The Squash with Paul Taylor and Gavin Duenas this week, and Gavin Duenas and me next week. Hope you're enjoying all of our content, which you can find on your favorite podcast providers, so please search WrestleTalk, and you can find it there. Also, you should subscribe to WrestlePlus.com for $4.99 a month, where you'll find all the podcasts, plus all the other content, plus a bunch of other stuff. Well worth your investment and well worth your time, so come and join us there as well. We'll be back next week with another Troopany show. Not quite sure, because we're going to have a production meeting in about 10 seconds' time. Thank you very much for your time. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye.